Welcome to episode 301 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts,
Tish
and Dr. T. In this episode, we discuss the Tigers' revival, plans to buy Leichhardt Oval, and much, much more. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. Welcome to episode 301 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the greatest game of all, rugby league. This is Rugby League for the people. I'm your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me is Tish. Tish, we have just seen multicultural round in the NRL and your beloved Tigers getting back in the winner's circle. Are we seeing the Tigers revival under King Benji Marshall?
Potentially, who knows? But look, it's very exciting. I think for the last two seasons straight, the Tigers have not won their first five or six games. So the fact they were able to win their second game of the year, I think it was great. But look, I think it was a pretty good round of rugby league, right? There was a few scores that sort of went a little in reverse to what everybody expected. But you know, we've only got one team that has got three wins from three games, and we only have one team that has three losses from three losses. So it's a really interesting competition, I think, already this year, right? It's, I think at the start of the year, everybody felt that, maybe it's just going to be a one or two horse race. But I think the NRL is definitely proving that there seems to be a bit of right now, all the teams seem to be very close, and nobody's really kicking to a new level just quite yet.
Absolutely. And just on that point, we're going to talk about it later, but we might as well talk about it now. We've seen lots of injuries actually happening for some of the major teams. So that's another thing that's going to bring some of the front runners back to the field. You know, the Panthers have lost Nathan Cleary for how long do we hear? I think he's got an ACL injury potentially. Is that what you've heard?
Yeah.
He's
going to miss two games out for like 4 weeks because they have a bye somewhere in the middle or something like that. So
yeah, and Mitch Moses from Parramatta is out for a little bit as well, broken foot or something like that, and that's like 12 weeks or I don't know. It keeps changing, but it's a longer period. Which begs the question, Tish. Just as we approach Easter round, we've got Moses and the next Jesus, Cleary. Out of action. Even in the olden days when they were out of action, you knew that he'd be back in 3 days, give or take. So, you know, come on, everyone, the Easter spirit, let's hope our injured gods get through it quickly. The ones that we idolize, of course, you know, let's make sure that they get well. But look, as I said, I think it's going to bring them back to the field, isn't it? I mean, here we saw this weekend, we'll talk about in a minute, the Panthers and the Eels sort of really staking their claim. Obviously, the Panthers are one of the favourites for the competition, but this is going to change things for a few weeks. So, as you said, there's, it's a close competition. Probably we're going to keep saying it, closer than ever. But injuries, who knows what that's going to bring to the competition. It's definitely going to challenge some of the better teams. But look, without any further ado, let's just jump into the review of round three, the multicultural round. Here we are, tackle number one. All right, the multicultural round of the NRL round three started off with the Penrith Panthers 34-12 over the Brisbane Broncos at Bluebet Stadium. That was a Thursday night game. It was followed up by Friday 6 p.m. at Apollo Project Stadium, which I believe is Christchurch, where the Warriors 18 over Canberra Raiders 10. That was a very entertaining match. Then we saw the Roosters trounce the South Sydney Rabbitohs 48-6. in the Friday night primetime game at Allianz Stadium in Sydney. Following day, at 3 p.m. at Belmore Sports Ground, we saw the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs 32-0 over the Gold Coast Titans. Desi Hasler under a bit of pressure there. That was followed up by a St. George Illawarra Dragons trouncing at the hands of the Cowboys, 46-12. Sorry, 46-24. The Cowboys won that one. That was followed up by, we're going to talk about this obviously in a lot more detail later, the Tigers 32-6, bit of an upset win, I think, over the Sharks, who would be considered one of the front runners of the competition at Leichhardt Oval, at their traditional home ground there. So well done, the Tigers. A huge win to kick off the new Benji Marshall era. Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m. at CommBank Stadium, Parramatta Eels 28-24 over the Manly Warringah Seagulls. And finally, another upset. I think I predicted this one. The Knights 14-12 over the Melbourne Storm at McDonald Jones Stadium, the Sunday at 6:15-ish p.m. game. And the bye, obviously, Dolphins had the bye there. So, look, a couple of questions, Tish. There was a lot of quality. I have to say, across the board, the games more and more, regardless of which one you watch, regardless of whether they're close or not close, geez, they're entertaining this year. I was so entertained this round. I was enthralled in almost all the games that I watched. You know, Warriors and Raiders, I couldn't pull them apart. I was worried at the beginning, at the end there, that the Warriors were going to let another 8-point lead slip. You know, they've already done that with the Storm, but alas, they did not do that, which is good because I think I tipped them. You know, Roosters and Rabbitohs, like, I was settling in for an interesting kind of tussle, ended up being a trouncing instead. But the Roosters, you know, like, you can't fault them for their effort. You know, James Tedesco, again, he's revived his career. It's a story of revivals. Benji Marshall, revival. James Tedesco, revival. Luke Brooks, you know, even though Manly lost, like, he was certainly, you know, toe-to-toe with Mitchell Moses as the star kind of playmakers in both their teams. You know, what's going on here? Is Aaron Woods going to have a revival as well? Seems like all the former Tigers players are going to have a revival. But, look, yeah, just – and the Tigers, of course, can't go past the Tigers. They really surprised a lot of people, and I want to unpack that a little bit later. So I'll keep my comments to myself for now, but I want to throw it to you, Tish. Obviously, for you, the highlight of the round would have to be that Tigers match.
Yeah, look, obviously, yeah. Look, personally, as a Tigers supporter, you know, as I said, that they haven't had the best starts of the season in the last few years, which we've won the wooden spoon. So now there is a bit of hope because, you know, we're sort of, you know, we're not trying to pay catch up when we finally get, you know, on the board with some points and some victories. But look, it's still a tough season, and we do have to talk about how they're going to go. But look, I think the match at around for me was Parramatta versus Manly. That was definitely a really high quality game. Both teams were attacking, you know, with quite a lot of flair. You saw some long, you know, sort of beautiful long range try from Manly, and they were ahead in the game for, you know, I think they might have gone in, even into halftime still in the lead, but you know, Parramatta were able to come back and put on some tries on their own as well. So, you know, from their side. And then, yeah, it just became a 4-point ball game towards the end. You know, there was a bit of a controversial obstruction call. So the game had everything. And I actually saw an American YouTuber. He actually was reviewing the, you know, the NRL round three. And he actually talked about there was this, you know, like the advertisement for the game, where, you know, there was a Parramatta player that absolutely smashed Josh Alloway, right, off the kickoff, and then Manly spread the ball and then scored a try off that. So that was like a 90-meter try. And then he just said, this is the elevator pitch for the NRL in America. Like, if everybody just watches this 90 seconds of footage, they'll understand exactly why rugby league's awesome, because you know, because of the strong tackle, the way they got back up, the way their try was scored out on the wide, it's spectacular, right? So I think great on both teams, and obviously Manly getting the victory. Most disappointing, we're going to talk about them a bit later, but I think the Bunnies, it is a bit sad what's happening. And look, on the flip side, I do think the Roosters are playing quite an impressive brand of football, but I actually probably have to give it back down to Brisbane. I think this was going to be a really crucial, difficult game for Penrith and against the Broncos. So I think Penrith did well in the grand final rematch, just to show how much they're dominating. But obviously with the injury to Cleary and not really having a, I didn't know of the player that they're using instead of Cleary this week. So I do feel like, I think the injury for Cleary might have an effect over their performance over the next 2 weeks. But we shall see.
Yeah, and look, just on that, we were talking about injuries. We have to mention one that's captured the imagination of the media, unfortunately, because it's happened to, I guess you would say, the new golden child of the league. In fact, someone who's actually just signed the richest deal in history, I believe, rugby league, or at least in recent history. I think he's just signed a $1.1 million deal. Reece Walsh of the Broncos was involved in a head clash. So I want to very simply put it out there.
He lost his eyesight, right? He couldn't see the ball after that injury. It was quite horrific.
It was horrific. But I have to say, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, why who was it? Was it Taylan May or someone else, someone like that? Was the offender from the Panthers side? You know, why wasn't he sent off as well? Because the other player was injured. You know, look, we've seen, you know, if you remember years gone by, what was that? I forget his name now. Used to lead with a head from the Roosters and Queensland. Had a massive forehead. I forget his name, but. You know, like there were situations like that where there were some players that definitely had a tackling technique issue, let's just say. What I saw, however, in this situation was purely an accident. It didn't even look like they clashed heads. Like, it looked like the Panthers player kind of pulled away. Now, I've watched the replay a few times. I want to get your thoughts. What do you think? Do you think it was an accidental head clash and nothing more, just an unfortunate situation, or do you think the Panthers player actually, you know, could be in trouble because he leads from the head a little bit in terms of the tackle. Well, what are your thoughts?
Okay, so in commentary, I don't know if it was Cameron Smith or Billy Slater. It's like, oh, well, you know, your head's always going to be in front of your shoulder. How could you lead with the head? But that doesn't even make sense, right? So I was like, yeah, okay, I think they have a point. But then when I actually thought about it, I thought, no, if you're leading with the shoulder, your arms are going to be in front of the head, right? So, you know, because you're trying to get the shoulder in, you're not trying to get the head in. So I think based on that, the fact that that's what the referee ruled, and looking back at it, yeah, man, he is definitely leading with the head. I don't think that is a responsible way to tackle a player, right? So I definitely think that, you know, poor technique should be punished. Whether it should be a suspension, I'm not 100% sure. Whether it should be a charge, maybe take a look at it. But I definitely think that, like, you know, in other sports, you know, you get pulled for, you know, technique, right? You know, you sort of didn't execute something the right way, so you get penalized for it. I think in rugby league, tackling is part of the game. And if you're not on the field as a professional football player and not leading with the shoulder first or leading with the arms first, and have your head in front of your arms, there's nothing the referee can do but penalize you. I feel like that is a technique that you should have learned at under nines, and the fact that you're not doing it there, I just don't think that's a valid argument, right? Do you know what I mean? So I definitely think that if that's what they put him up for, I definitely think it's okay. I know Gus disagrees with me, I suppose he's, but whatever. But, like, you know, you can't do that. Like, I just don't think you could do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, I think I purely think it looked accidental. I still look at it as accidental, and I don't think it's a technique issue. I think it's really unfortunate. I feel very sorry for Reece Walsh that he had to undergo that, and probably is going to have some long-lasting effects as well. I just think it was accidental from the way I saw it. I'm just going to finish off by saying, while you were talking, I googled NRL player with big forehead because I completely forgot his name. Nate Miles is who I'm talking about. Nate Miles, remember him?
Okay. He, yes.
And there
the
was
Paul Gallen, best friend.
When
right?
you Exactly. When you Google his, like, literally everything is about his tackling technique. He's got a big head, you know. Those are the first kind of pages of. So anyway, I'm glad I Google. Well done, Google. Your AI really works well to get to the point. Look, let's get on to the meat of what I really want to talk about today, which is the Tigers revival. So let's get into it. Tackle number two. Here we go. All right, so we saw the Tigers win comfortably against the Sharks over the weekend. And I wanted to sort of unpack what's going on there because, you know, in the lead up to this game, we heard a lot from the media about Benji's, you know, seemingly relaxed kind of coaching approach, meaning he wanted to prioritize family and he wasn't going to be the kind of coach that goes in, you know, like goes in early and is the last one out. He very clearly stated that he's also prioritizing time with his family, but he'll be there, you know, he'll be there early to do what needs to be done, but there are certain times where they're out of bounds. And I actually thought I respect him for that. I thought that was fine, but the media went all over him. You know, it's like a relaxed attitude. He's not really focused. He's not really dedicated. And then they produce a 32-6 win over the Sharks who, you know, in let's just go look. In game one, they flogged – sorry, in game round two, the previous round, 25-6 over the Bulldogs, fair enough. But they also beat the Warriors 16-12 in game one in Auckland. So, look, after the season the Warriors had last year, for the Sharks to go there and beat them at their home ground – I think was a really big, to me, that was a big sign that they're here to play. And for the Tigers to give it to them in the last round, 32-6, where, you know, at Leichhardt Oval, admittedly, the spiritual home, there's a lot of home crowd kind of advantage there at Leichhardt Oval. I think it sort of sent a message across the NRL that the Tigers are back, they're serious, and they've already taken out a contender. Now, the only thing I would say is the Sharks are often quite bad at playing well against the top teams and not so well against the bottom teams, I think. I think that's also something that a few other teams suffer. So it could be the case that they just had a bad day. But, look, I felt like they kind of completely dominated. I wanted to unpack a little bit what you think was the reason for that, because I know we're talking just one game. But is it enough to look at – let's look at the players that they've got. Let's look at their squad. Let's look at the way they played. Is there some, are there any green flags there that tell us this is a good sign that this team has been turned around or is about to be turned around? So I thought I'd open that up to you. Tish, you are a Tigers fan here, and I think you have a right of first opinion here, and let's see where we can go from there. So what do you reckon is the reason for what we saw? It was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah. Well, look, I think, first of all, the Tigers didn't start off great. Okay. Last week, the first week when they played against Canberra, they didn't have the ball for the first 10 minutes, and they, I think, led in two tries and already behind the eight ball, right? And then they sort of were resilient enough to come back, but then they just let them back in, right? And then so a similar sort of thing happened in this game too, where, Tom Hazelton came in the 30th minute, scored a try. And then you think, okay, well, this is going to sort of open up the floodgates. But, you know, the Tigers were able to show resiliency, get on the board with their own try. And then they were able to keep on that. There was really, I think my favorite try was the Justin Olam try. I think I think the first try was he got penalized for making a tackle, which was, I thought, completely legal. I don't know why they didn't do that, but the crowd went nuts, right? Got the crowd into it, you know, Justin Olam just, you know, hitting somebody really hard, right? So, you know, it was good to see. And then, but then he's got that try off Appy Korosau, which was fantastic. So, I don't want to be, because last year they beat Penrith and they also beat the Cowboys by like almost 60 points, right? At Leichhardt as well. So they out of their four wins, though, that's two of their wins. So I know that they've had the capacity to win well and win well at Leichhardt, which is what they did this weekend. So I didn't want to necessarily, increase my expectations too high just on the back of one night performance, because you've got to also perform on, you know, a Friday night game, a Monday night game. You've got to be able to perform week in, week out at that level. But, you know, but at the back of my mind, it reminded me of the Tigers' performance actually in 2005. I think it was round three against the Bulldogs, where, you know, they actually, you know, the Bulldogs led by, I think about two tries within like the first 10 minutes. And the Tigers ended up winning it with a Scott Prince field goal right at the end. And the Bulldogs were actually the premiers the year before, right? But in that game, if you actually watch that game closer, you'll notice that, you know, the West Tigers at the start of the game are a completely different side to the end of the game, because in the middle, they worked out what type of team they needed to be in order to win this game and probably to win more games, which is they've got to stop passing it out wide all the time. They've got to run straight. They've got to run hard. And then they let their magic players do the work. And Scott Prince, he organizes the play. He organizes the kicking game. He gets them off to a good start in terms of a good kicking game, and it worked out well. I felt in this game, the Tigers on field actually worked out what works for them, right? They had Aiden Caesar kicking to the corners the whole game. Every so often, you know, Gavin would come in with sort of a unique sort of, you know, last tackle play, you know, and then so, but what they focused on was playing direct through Api Korosau. They focused on offloads. I think they did, you know, in terms of the offload count, I'm pretty sure they would have dominated that for sure against, against
15-7.
So double the amount of that. And then if you're doing that many offloads, you're probably going to be leading with dummy passes as well, right there, Doxy T?
No, three all.
All right. Okay. Anyway, so as you can see, but they worked it out. So I think that's where is positive. And then the way they celebrate, I think the Leichhardt factor was huge too, right? The way they were celebrating. You know, Lachlan Gavin, when he came out, they showed footage of him. I don't know if you caught this, but the way he was smiling when he came out to Leichhardt and heard the ovation of the Tigers, it was like a dream come true. And he even said it in the interview, like, you know, I was a Tigers junior and I played there for a while. Then he actually went to the Parramatta system, and then he said things happened, and I went back. So don't know what that was, but you could tell that this kid has always wanted to play for the Tigers. So I think that's what the hope is that some of these players, they definitely have pride in being a West Tiger, which is really unusual, right? Right at the moment, but that's what they have, and I think what they're trying to build. I think bringing Benji back in a coaching role, head coach, I think time will still tell, but I think it's a good thing, because I think there is a culture being built around it. On the social media, they're all wearing the same outfit, so I don't know if there's a uniform thing happening as well. But I noticed that all the staff, in Benji's crew, they're all wearing the same clothing. I noticed every time they scored a try, they'd go over to the coach's box and everybody else was celebrating apart from Benji. So I feel like there is definitely a bit of a change as well, like in terms of what to expect and what not to expect. So, yeah, but I think, yeah, a great performance. I don't want to get carried away, though. How about yourself, Dr. T?
Yeah, look, really good insights there. I want to pick up on something because, as you were saying, I was thinking this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. The interview after the game, I saw Lachlan Galvin being asked a few things, and you did mention, you know, the way he talked about his pride and coming back to the Tigers jersey and all that kind of thing. But there was something else he said which I wanted to sort of draw your attention to. He did mention about how they were asked, you know, what is it that Benji's – what advice has he given you? You know, what's he like as a coach, that kind of thing. I think that was the gist of the questioning. And his answer was something along the lines of, you know, he's really given me confidence, even though I'm young, to go out there and just basically kind of have a bit of freedom and play what's in front of me kind of thing. And when he said that, I was like, oh, that's interesting. He's trying to instill the Benji Marshall kind of approach to football to his team. So, you know, he isn't just sort of saying, and he's not just molding them into being razzle dazzle. He's saying the common sense thing, which is go out there and play what's in front of you. And you mentioned this thing about, you know, the team in 2005. You know, typical Tigers fan, reverting back to the year that you won the premiership. But anyway, reminiscing like a Niels fan would of the 80s. No, you know, like yours truly. But yeah, the fact that he sort of that sort of aligns with what you're saying, that he, you know, the approach back then was, you know, play what's in front of you. And so you do, the good teams do that. They have their system, but they also know that if that system isn't going to work against a particular team, then you have to adapt accordingly. Now, one of the ways that you can see that some teams are like system teams is that if they have like a team that's constantly their bogey side, or, you know, like the side that's always got the wood on them, even though they're a dominant team, that tells you that team that the focuses on, you know, the system too much and the process. So Panthers is an example that, you know, even though they've won three in a row, the Eels for some reason are the only team that have a winning record against them in the last few years. Now, is that because the Eels are as good as them? Yes, sometimes. But it's also, I think, because potentially the Panthers just have a system and don't necessarily adapt when that system doesn't work against another team. Like, they're not trying new things. Whereas Benji, if anything, we know that he was renowned for, you know, playing what's in front of him and being a very kind of, you know, agile player in that way. And I think the fact that he gave that advice to Lachlan Galvin is, and the fact that, you know, put together what you said as well, the love and the pride of the team. You look at the team list as well, you know, they've got the form hooker of the competition. He'll probably get revisit the New South Wales Blues team this year, Appy Korosau. You've got Isaiah Papali'i, John Bateman, who are very experienced in the forwards. You've got the halves, yeah, Lachlan Galvin Jr., but Aiden Caesar was a beast at Canberra, you know, several years. Was it Canberra? Canberra, I think he played for.
Canberra, prior to that, the Gold Coast.
And then, yeah, but I think, look, don't, what do they say? Don't sleep on Caesar, because I think he's an underrated player, and he may not get called up for Origin, he may not be even thought of very much, but he is going to be a great Tigers club man this year. And Justin Olam in the centres there, plus you've got Jerome Buller at fullback, who's a Benji type player. You've got the makings of a pretty good team there. So even on paper, they've got some very intelligent players and players with experience in the right positions. And then you peppered the squad with a bunch of young players around that who are coachable and will look up to someone like Benji as a hero and will probably listen to them, just as, you know, in years gone by, the greatest coaches like Wayne Bennett have been listened to by young men who are being moulded by, you know, the great coaches like Jack Gibson, Craig Bellamy, you know, Wayne Bennett. So I think that's my view, is that, look, you put some of those key expert kind of people together, you put the fact that Benji's word is going to be revered by the young players, you've got a good mix of young and old in that Tiger squad, so on paper they're good, and you've got, you know, the makings of a focus on play what's in front of you, don't stick to, you know, the same kind of routines, etc. Now, that could be high risk going forward, especially if you have not a lackadaisical kind of approach to defence. But that's not what I saw from the Tigers. I saw a team that was like committed and they were prepared to take chances, and they were kind of you know, educated guess chances. They weren't completely risky. So I'm really looking forward to see. I'm hoping that this is an actual Benji revival of the Tigers, because I think a lot of people have thought, oh, well, you know, someone who has never coached NRL before, wouldn't you rather go for assistant coaches that went through a winning system like the Panthers? I don't know. ask after the Canterbury Bulldogs, what you think about that, because that hasn't worked out for them. So, anyway, that's my view. What about you? Finish it off.
Well, I was going to say that, Mitchell Pearce and Todd Carney have a podcast, right, where they're talking about, and they talk about the halfback problems, right, that there's a lack of halfbacks, and part of it is the pathways and the fact that, playing what's in front of you is getting coached out of them at a younger and younger age is one of the things that they sort of talk about, right? Because, you know, they kind of see these things sort of happening. And I think this is the benefit of perhaps having a coach that hasn't gone through a system and spent a decade as a development coach, right? Because he kind of sees, and he was a young, Benji was a young player that Tim Sheens gave him the reins to be all that he wanted to be when he was playing, right? And just give him that confidence. And I think this is probably maybe this, like Benji, but also maybe the style that he's bringing of how to develop players could be something that they could sort of, that could be a great thing. And I think that Todd Carney was talking about this as well, like when he first joined the Roosters, Jad Warrior Hargraves was also at the Roosters around the same time. So what would happen is, if let's just say that Todd Carney stuffs up a kick, right, Jad Warrior Hargraves would be the one that would tell him, mate, like, we tackled our butts off for you guys, probably not in that language, and you give us a terrible kick like that and we've got to defend our line again. If you're a young player getting into it and then you get told by your front row, mate, what are you doing, like, in terms of your kicking, it's not really good. Now, it shrinks your confidence, right? But then he goes later on the same game, right, he had another shocking kick, and then this time he went over to Warrior Hargraves and he goes, you give me a quick play the ball and I'll give you a good kick, right? And Jared goes, yep, okay, that's it, I'll do that. And then, and they were able to actually talk. And I think this is the confidence that you've got to give young players, right? I think that's why it's good to have a guy like Caesar there, because obviously Caesar takes the pressure off the young kid when it comes to the kicking. But then, I think he's teaching him the whole time that, look, we've got to finish off our sets really well because our forwards really work hard to keep the defensive structure in play. And then, the forwards, they want to run hard for you then, right? They want to run really hard for you. And then I think he really saw that team dynamic into effect. I mean, it was pretty embarrassing afterwards when they had pieces of paper so people could say the words for the team song, right? So they all had to sing it off a piece of paper. And then I was like, oh, man, has it been that long since we won again that nobody can remember the team song? But actually what it was is that Bench has actually got a new team song that he's getting everybody to learn as well. So they're trying to get rid of all the old things. So I think it's really refreshing. But yeah, and look, Cooper Cronk talked about this as well, where that a team is giving more effort than the other team when there's a loose ball and somebody dives on it. And he saw Appy do that, and that's why the Tigers had won, because they were just more desperate to receive the ball. And I think that is also something that hopefully Benchy, and then so he goes, that was something that Mal Meninga used to do at Origin. And I think Mal Meninga would have got it from Tim Sheens or Wayne Bennett. And I think Wayne Bennett, I think Benji has probably, I think he's styling himself under Wayne. I get that vibe, right? So we'll see. But yeah.
No, that's great. Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm looking forward to what we're going to see from the Tigers this year. I think the Benji era has arrived, and it remains to be seen whether his kind of, it's an enterprising, innovative way of doing things. And I think you're right. There's hopefully we'll hear more of that team song and they'll remember the words. And they have plenty of opportunities this year, but I'm looking forward to it. A strong Tigers team is what's needed. It has been needed for a while. So, and look, this leads to the next tackle where we're going to ask the question, Leichhardt Oval, to buy or not to buy? All right. So there's been, because of the great crowd and the the atmosphere at Leichhardt Oval on the weekend. There's been calls for, you know, what could the NRL do to, could they buy the ground, develop it, improve it? Is that the tactic? Is it the right thing to do, given they're only there 3 games a year, all that kind of stuff? And so a lot of that has come out. And I think Peter Volandis has actually responded to some of that, saying, well, he's actually said, if they're willing to give it to us, we're interested. And some people are saying, well, he wants it for free because he said, give it to us. I think what he meant was the council or whatever would have to actually put it up for sale. That's obviously, yeah. He's not thinking that they're going to get it for free. I mean, people on the internet are very silly sometimes, and the fact that that needed to be explained is ridiculous. But the question here I want to ask, Tish, is, look, this folds into, rather than folding into the Tigers revival story, it's more just about what is the NRL stadium policy, what's the focus of the NRL. I want to bring that back to the discussion that we talked about last week, where Peter Volandis made some comments about, you know, he wants there to be more of a focus on suburban grounds. In the case of the Tigers and the split identity here, is the focus really the Campbelltown suburban ground as opposed to this one? There's some benefits. Obviously, Campbelltown has much better situation in terms of public transport, parking, etc. It's much more likely to be the future of the Tigers going forward. There is a nostalgia here, but is nostalgia enough to put money towards it? Is it just wasted money if the NRL buys it or develops the area or whatever the case may be? So, Tish, what are your thoughts? Leichhardt Oval, if you were Peter Volandis, would you be pursuing the purchase of Leichhardt Oval?
Yes, I would. Look, I think that Peter Volandis, he's made some statements, right? Like, you know, about, and one of these is the suburban grounds. And I think I did hear, well, if he's going to say that, what happens when Jubilee needs a, you know, Cogger Oval needs a revamp, if Shark Park needs a revamp? And yeah, I suppose those things will come down the track as well, right? Because, but that's the reality of suburban grounds, right? Some of them do need an upgrade. And I think Leichhardt is definitely one that needs, you know, some facility changes, some things to sort of improve it without necessarily losing the history of it type thing. But and I think that's why they need to do it, because I think it is really part of rugby league culture. I haven't actually experienced it myself, what some of the people are talking about how, because I don't live in the area, I don't know about, you know, some people talking about how great it feels when you're walking to the game. And then apparently all the pubs had, like, over the weekend, they had the orange and blue balloons out, like, of yesteryear. And then, you know, walking to the game, then walking back. And apparently it's not just Leichhardt that was full, but all the pubs around Leichhardt were full. And it just does so much for the community. I don't know about all that, but it definitely feels like it is rugby league heartland, right, when you see them play at Leichhardt. And you definitely see it to be the Tigers' actual home ground, you know. So just the same way you kind of see it with Belmore and stuff like that, there is something special of watching the Tigers play at Leichhardt, you know, as well as watching, you know, the Bulldogs play at Belmore and you know, it, Penrith playing at Penrith, but they get the luxury of doing that every week, right? So I think, you know, if on the one hand, and I know because part of the reason is also because Shane Richardson, you know, who was the Rabbitohs CEO when the Rabbitohs moved to ANZ Stadium, which a lot of people hated, which is the Olympic Stadium, and then they've moved back since. But, like, you know, I think there's talk that the Tigers might move back to ANZ Stadium, which is kind of a lifeless building when you don't have a lot of people there. But, you know, I don't know if it's just people hating on Shane Richardson or if it's like, you know, Shane Richardson himself has kind of like still got the not got the memo from the NRL that they're focusing on suburban grounds. But I really feel like I think it'd be a shame if we stop seeing games at Leichhardt. And I think we've got to do that too. We've got to preserve rugby league history as much as we can. I don't know if it's still the oldest ground that everybody plays on, right? Because I know the Tigers used to play at Birchgrove, but I believe that they moved to Leichhardt pretty early on. So it could be something that we need to preserve. Do we need to put a rugby league museum in there or something, you know? What do we need to do to to make it, if the NRL bought it, with, you know, how do you make it into a money making asset?
Well, there is a Wayne Pearce Hill, isn't there? So let's get Wayne Pearce to tell us what should we do, because if anyone has that connection to, you know, the Tigers of yesteryear and the future of rugby league, having been on the commission recently, what does Wayne Pearce think about that? I wonder, because it's a good set of questions that you're asking there. There's a lot at stake here. Is it that it is nostalgia enough, really, to keep this even a live question, or should we just forget it as Tigers? Should the Tigers just forget it and move on and to Campbelltown as the future? In which case, you know, there were some comments that Shane Richardson was making, comments just about like bringing it up to standard. And if that's all that they need, you know, making sure the dunnies are working and all that kind of stuff, that it's not a terrible experience for those that are there, then that's fine. But if people are talking about, oh, it's terrible, the food outlets are so old and this, that, the other, it's like, if that's what you expect, then go to one of the state-of-the-art new stadiums like Allianz or whatever, because that's what you're going to get. You're going to get a supreme new experience. Everything's clean, freshly built kind of thing. You're not going to get that at one of the oldest grounds, if not the oldest. So, it's an interesting question. I think the other thing to consider is Peter Volandis might be looking at this not just in the sense of bringing up to speed, bringing up to standard the quality of a ground that they happen to play on only three games a year, and that they've approved that. It might be that it's an investment strategy. Maybe it's the case that they're looking at ways to kind of purchase it, build it up, maybe sell more time and ground, you know, games on it. Maybe other sports can play there. It can become a state-of-the-art, you know, whatever. Or at least components of it can be state-of-the-art while still retaining the hill, which is something that you don't see in any other grounds now. Everyone gets a seat. So, look, there's probably some things that they could do to bridge both the old and the new. But definitely, when Peter Volandis is interested in something, no doubt that it's not just about the sentimental value of it. He's probably got an eye to, can it make us money as a code, as a sport? And if he's interested, he would have already done the numbers. He wouldn't just be saying, yep, I'm interested. I think they've already done the numbers on this. They've thought about this already, and their numbers probably are telling them, look, if the opportunity comes up, maybe we should purchase this ground, and maybe we'll purchase another ground, and then that way we've got assets and we can then do something with assets and build on it or whatever. So let's not discount that element of this situation. But Tish, shall we move on to, we're talking about the oldest ground, but let's talk about the oldest club, and it seems to be heading south. The Bunnies, let's talk about them. Tackle number 4. Wow, very James Bond-esque music there. look, the Bunnies are heading south. We wanted to talk about their very poor form at this time of year. We talked about already some of the, the undercurrent of unrest inside the club itself. Jason Demetriou is under a lot of pressure to turn their form around. There are calls for him to move Latrell Mitchell away from fullback back towards the centre, where he kind of belongs, I think. They got flogged by their traditional rivals. I mean, if Russell Crowe was there, he would have done the thumbs down, gladiator style. Like, it was a bummer of a game for a Rabbitohs fan to watch. And they haven't won a game this year so far. So, and the other thing to point out is under Jason Demetriou, the Rabbitohs have actually lost 12 of their last 16 games. And, they've also lost their last 5 games in a row from last year, if you continue that, where they missed out on the top 8, where they were within striking distance. So things are not looking good and have been, you know, going down, down, down. But Jason Demetriou, is he the reason? Is he going to be in the firing line soon? Or what other reasons might there be? Tish, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's very strange. I think everybody is caught by surprise in terms of, you know, you would have thought that South Sydney was able to sort of, you know, perhaps pull off a victory, you know, this year so far, but they haven't been able to at all. And, you know, the worst thing about it is that their losing margin is really bad. Like, they're losing by more than 20 points on average per game over the last 3 weeks. So not good signs at all. They really had a, I think they were leading the competition halfway through last year, right? And then they've just had a dramatic form dump. Some people, you know, want to question Latrell Mitchell and Cody Walker and the incident with Sam Walker and things like that. But I actually had went and looked back and actually realized that their losing form actually began before Latrell. Like, I think Latrell was still injured when, you know, when the losing streak started to happen. So I think the problem, I don't think you could say that the problem started with Latrell at all, actually. Like, so I think he's kind of being unfairly targeted a little bit. And I think the media is all over it. They're all jumping and saying, and I think I even heard that Jason Demetriou has only got 3 weeks to revive it. But this is the crazy thing about the whole debate, and I think this is the real issue, is that I think their attack is actually okay. And everybody seems to be talking about their attack a lot. But they're leaking too much points. So I think the problem is actually with their defense. And I think the big reason why their defense isn't doing so well, you know, is, I mean, who actually is their defensive coach at the moment, right? Like, did they actually replace anybody from Sam Burgess after he left? Right? Because I think that's where the actual problem is. I think they're scoring enough points. I think they're able to do that. But the problem is that you know, they're probably not finishing sets off that well. They're probably, yeah, they're just not hungry enough in defense. And it could be, and this is, you know, so I think Latrell Mitchell was actually a great fullback. I think he's actually doing pretty well from the attacking point of view. But I don't know if he is the best when it comes to making cover tackles when there's a break, right? I think that's where they have a bit of a challenge, right? Is, you know, when there's a line break, I mean, Latrell's that last line of defense. You know, if he can't make the tackle, is there anybody else in their team quick enough to actually get back there too? You know, because it feels like, you know, there was a couple opportunities to score tries and the winger wasn't even in position, right? So I feel like, you know, is the team too old and too slow? Maybe that's what it is. But I just feel like they've got a, I think the thing that is the worst for them is actually the defense, which is the thing that nobody seems to be talking about. And I think the other thing is that they kind of had three really tough games, right, already. Like, the Roosters are going to be a tough rivalry team. They played Manly in the US. And then they had the hangover game against the Broncos, who were last year's grand finalists, right? So I think they didn't get the best start to the season in terms of, you know, they didn't get a West Tigers. They didn't get a Dragons or a, you know, or a Titans or a Dogs or a, you know, a team that sort of finished in the bottom, you know, but the bottom five. They do get the Dogs this week, but the Dogs actually had a really good win last week. So I think this is the real interesting week, because I think psychologically, if you lose your first four games, that would be devastating. And I think this is a more desperate game than even last week's game. But yeah, that's what I've got to say. I think the move to drop Ilias was wrong, because I thought about, yeah. I thought about, if you're Damien Cook. Cook or Havili, and you know, you choose who's gonna get the ball. You're gonna hear Latrell say something, you're gonna hear Cody Walker say something else, you can say Cam Murray might say something, and Lachlan Ilias is gonna say something. There's no way that Lachlan Ilias, even though he's the halfback, his voice is not gonna be heard over those players, right? Because they're all internationals, you know. So I think there's a bit of a team dynamic challenge with that, right? Where I think they've got to go, you know what? No, you are the halfback. Your voice comes first in attack. Because otherwise, when everybody else is calling for the ball, I don't think it works.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think there is an element of that. And look, maybe, yeah, I certainly don't think dropping Ilias was the right move. I don't think dropping Cork was the right move either. I don't think they were very solid in, like, Cork really brought, I think, even though it didn't look like it on the scoreboard, I thought he actually changed the dynamics of the team when he came on. I think they were more sharper in the middle. I think where the Rabbitohs went astray, you know, we can talk about the defence and I'll talk about that in a minute, which is kind of obvious. I agree with you. I think maybe people aren't talking about it enough, but I think it was not even the worst component of what I saw. I still think they have difficulty. You know, they were terrible in attack. and a few of their kind of more older heads were the biggest culprits. Cody Walker, Latrell Mitchell were terrible. I mean, the amount of times that Cody Walker made completely the wrong decision, made errors, gave the ball away, it just got really ridiculous. And to think that he is so experienced, if I was a Rabbitohs fan, I'd be livid. And in fact, you know, watching that game, thing, you know, when was it, Friday night, just thinking, they're not giving themselves or doing themselves any favors here the way they're playing. That, you know, their star players are not bringing anything to this game. They're looking frustrated. They're looking like they haven't really like they've never trained this year. You know, it looks like they're just not sharp at all. And, you know, that to me could come down to, at this stage of the season when you're not this sharp, it's got something to do with the coach. It's got something to do with the training regime. The other thing that I want to point out is, I'm not just picking on the experienced players, but this is sort of a highlight or highlights the fact that there are problems. When the experienced players are the ones making the most errors and not really leading by example, then you've got problems. Alex Johnson, I love the fact that he's one of the greatest try scorers of all time. It's amazing. And he's still pretty solid as a player. But I saw him a few times rush out of the line completely unnecessarily, leaving everyone else exposed. And I thought, is this their most experienced winger? This is ridiculous. What is going on where someone like Alex Johnson is acting like, one of those random players that are in all teams that you think, oh, geez, get them back, you know, like the young players that want to just be too eager to put a hit on. And when it's coming from Alex Johnson, you think, what's going on? So that to me, that and in the attack, the experienced players are not doing their job. But Tish, I put that to you as the reason why I think that is possibly coming from either being overcoached or not coached enough in terms of getting them prepared and utilizing their experience. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about it now. Like, I thought Jack Whiten had a good game, right? It was kind of his debut game for the Rabbitohs. And I thought he kind of tried and did well. And, like, he didn't try and, like, do a chip and chase or anything, like, unusual, right? But maybe Alex Johnson was just trying to get away from him, you know? Like, that could be why he was rushing up. But, look, but in terms of, a few years ago, the Cowboys had this sort of situation, and then so Todd Payton came in, and Todd Payton basically said, Tamalolo, you're not playing for 80 minutes no more, because, you know, when you try to play for 80 minutes, you give us, 40 minutes of good and 40 minutes of bad, so I'm just going to get you to play 60 minutes or something like that, right? So, I don't think Tamalolo liked it too much, and now he's had the captaincy take over. But I think this is the kind of coach they kind of need, right? I think they need a coach that shakes it up a little bit and just sort of disrupts their flow, because I think whatever they're doing, it feels like whatever they were doing round 15 or halfway through last year is what they're still doing now. You need somebody to sort of disrupt the way things are, just to make people a little bit uncomfortable with their sort of roles. I think all of these guys are great competitors. I think they're all great players. They are probably, a lot of them are probably moving towards the end of the career, but I think that's okay as well. I think you could still add lots of value. But I think they just need to shake things up a little bit. And I don't think you shook up enough when you sack a young halfback, right? And now the problem is they're stuck, right? Because they got smashed last week. They can't change it back to the other halfback, can they, right? Because that will actually affect the new halfback that replaced the other old halfback. Do you know what I mean? And so looking at their lineup, Mitchell is back, as well as Lachlan Ellis, but I don't know if they'll get a run. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what they end up doing. And, they're playing the Bulldogs as well, which they had a great win. And going in with a bit of a confidence, I think it's shaping up to be a pretty good clash on Easter Friday.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's move on to tackle number five. We're going to talk about the NRL and what they've offered to the NFL, surprisingly. Here we go. All right. Tish, do you want to take this one? This is about how the NRL has influenced the NFL in terms of hip drop tackles.
Yep, sure. So, I read a report from the Baltimore Sun, which they were going through some news. But, over the weekend, the NFL have dropped the hip drop tackle, according to multiple reports. On Monday, all the NFL teams met in the annual general meeting, and it was unanimously approved the ban to rule players from using a swiveling technique when tackling the opponents. The Baltimore Sun goes on to say that before the hip drop tackle became a buzz phrase and a fast-rising concern in the NFL, it was already something that the National Rugby League, headquartered in Sydney, was looking to eliminate. And they even have a quote from Graham Annesley, who spoke directly to the Baltimore Sun, saying, "We're noticing 3 or 4 years ago, we are getting close to a lot of leg injuries, ankle injuries, and in some cases, knee injuries. Where they had fairly similar attributes in relation to the type of tackle that was performed. And that's why they got rid of it." And that was Graham Annesley saying, which is probably the shortest quote he's ever said in his life. But there you go. But look, it's interesting to say that the NRL was a bit forward-thinking a little bit when it comes to duty kick, because usually the NRL sometimes accused of being a bit slow on these sort of things, but it looks like the attitude of actually just trying to keep player safety as a priority is something that other sports are now starting to recognise. And I think that is very commendable for the NRL to now have that situation where they are actually influencing probably the biggest sporting company in the world, right? In that being the NFL. And look, if you actually go and read the report for the Baltimore Sun, they do talk about rugby union and they go through the history of rugby union. Right.
Oh no. Where's Russell Crowe? We need him.
The naming problem is still the number one issue that PVL needs to fix. Right. I do think it is actually the thing, because it's now time. We just got to do it, because it is super bad when another code gets attributed for the good thing you've done. Do you know what I mean? Like they're doing.
It's a huge problem, Tish. Let's not open up that. We could devote a whole episode to that. But yeah, you're right. I think that's unfortunate that's the case. But yeah, the hip drop thing, I think that's interesting that the NFL has been influenced by what the NRL has done, and that they've took our advice, especially Graham Annesley's advice as well on how to look for, how to reduce injuries of a certain type because of the way players are starting to tackle other players. I think it's less an issue in NFL though, because a lot of what they do is pushing and shoving and impact, as opposed to the grappling, wrestling kind of nature of rugby league and rugby union as well. But I think there's still some, there's still some bits of, connection there. And I think it's good that the NFL is actually listened to someone else. And, that's very interesting that they're looking to other sports for advice on that. So that's really good that the NRL is involved in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Look, we are almost at the tips. Here we go. Tackle number six, the Easter round four.
correct. So last week we both got 6 out of 8, which takes our current totals for me to 12 and for you to 16. You are still 4 points ahead so early in the season. Let's get into round 4, the Easter round. And look, starting off on Thursday, we've got the Roosters versus the Panthers. Tish, I think given what we've heard with the Panthers injury, I'm going to tip the Roosters.
I'm going to tip the Panthers.
All right, Rabbitohs versus Bulldogs, Friday, 6 p.m. at Accor Stadium. I think the Rabbitohs will win this one.
I'm going to tip the Bulldogs. You know, last week was the first time that I can remember all four Western Sydney teams won. So I think the Bulldogs can back it up.
Broncos v Cowboys, Friday, 8 p.m. at Suncorp Stadium. I think the Cowboys, again, they just look like they're on fire this season.
Absolutely. Like 4 wins from 4 games, I'm tipping the Cowboys as well. So, yeah, wow. There you go, the Cowboys. Who would have thought it?
All right, Dragons, Manly, Saturday, 5:30 p.m. at Wind Stadium. I'm tipping Manly.
Yeah, I'm tipping Manly on this one as well. Yeah, because I think they played really well, and I think the Dragons were, I mean, they blew a lead to get smashed, so yeah.
All right, the derby, the local derby of the smaller Queensland clubs, the Titans versus the Dolphins at Cbus Super Stadium. I'm tipping the Dolphins.
I'm going to tip the Titans to get their first win. I think, we don't really hear about the Titans too much in Sydney, but I think Dez is probably feeling the pressure, and you know, you can't keep a good coach down for too long.
All right, Warriors and Knights, Sunday, 4 p.m. Hang on, is that correct? Sunday, so Easter Sunday, the Warriors versus the Knights at Go Media Stadium. I'm tipping the Warriors.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Knights. I think they had a good win last week, and I feel like they'll do that. Have these two tubers already? Oh, no, that's, they haven't played yet. So, yeah, but it's a bit weird, yeah.
Sharks v Raiders at PointsBet Stadium on Sunday evening at 6:15 p.m. I think the Raiders, look, the Sharks, this is going to be a good game, but I think the Raiders just have, we'll strike first this year, and we may see some follow-up games during the year where Sharks may get the revenge, but I think the Raiders will win this one.
Yeah, look, both teams looking for a resurrection on Sunday from their losses from last week. So I'm going to tip. I'm going to tip the Raiders on this one as well.
And, of course, my team versus your team, Easter Monday. I think it's already sold out at CommBank Stadium, for Monday, 4 p.m. Eels versus Tigers. I love this Easter Monday, regular clash that we have is something that I really look forward to. In years gone by, we've seen some very, very entertaining games with the Eels and Tigers. I think it'll be no different. It will be close. I think Mitchell Moses not being there is going to bring them a little bit back. I would have more confidently tipped the Eels than I would normally, but this time I'm tipping the Eels, but just.
Yeah, look, I'm going to tip my team, the Tigers. I think this game, as you said, it always has a lot of talking points coming out of it. And I think, they're rivals. They're next to each other. I think they sort of, a lot of players in the junior systems, they kind of, even with Lachlan Gavin, right, for example, they straddle between the two different sets there. And, one thing I did notice about, Parramatta, how many former Tigers players are actually in that lineup. But then you could say the same thing with the Tigers lineup too, right? So, I think it's going to be, I think when any one of the four Western Sydney teams meet, it's always going to be a good clash because there is a rivalry there. And I think this is going to be no different. Just, having Dylan Brown play halfback, Blaze Talagi now into 5/8, I think they should have kept Brown at 5/8 and got somebody else in to replace Moses. I just feel like weakening their lineup slightly by trying to take one of their strengths and trying to fix up a weakness by not having Moses. So that's the only thing. But yeah, but should be a great clash, both these teams.
Absolutely. All right. Look, and obviously the Storm have the bye. And it's time for us to say bye. Goodbye. It's episode 301.
done and dusted. It's been a big one. Happy Easter to everyone. Hope you, you know, moderately eat chocolate and don't overdo it. But and hope your kids have a lot of fun as well, and everyone out there celebrates as they normally do in over Easter. And so, yeah, have a good break, everyone. Enjoy the footy. There's a lot of it. And as I said this week, after this week's round, we're seeing a lot of good quality games, and I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of good quality ones this weekend too. Tish, over to you to wrap this up.
Well, thank you, Dr. Taylor, to thank everybody for listening, but that's all the time that we have on this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We are your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.